Hello, everyone. This is episode 60. Yeah, 60 of the Justin Files podcast. And we're doing cosmology, which is already making our brains hurt. So, Justin, help me out here.
So we'll start with news. Well, actually, let's start with like disclaimers and shit, right? So it's an adult podcast. We swear and talk about guns and sex, which is apparently not cool on YouTube. So
yeah, we don't get any money.
We're also going to spoiler freaking everything. So speaking of which, the big news is that Thomas turned the big whatever he turned this year. I should probably look up how old he's supposed to be, but you know, February 14th is, of course, Thomas's birthday, and the big announcement on the same day is the new book is out. Woo, we got new Dresden material. It's Dogmen. It's the comic. If you got really excited and you were like, how did I miss this? Because everybody got their little notification from Google Books and got really excited, and then it was Dogmen. But I hear okay things about it. Like, not the comics are not well beloved and whatever, but I got some tidbits through the chat, through the Discord chat, that I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to read this, because apparently something that's been rolling around in the background, like who makes things disappear from the government and stuff like that, at least gets a mention. So I'm like, ooh, that's material. We'll have to take a look at that.
But shit, I didn't know that was in there.
I might be making it sound more than it is because I'm excited about it, but it's definitely enough for me to like go grab a copy and take a look at it. I mean, it's Dresden, so I'm going to have it anyway. Surprise.
One thing I loved seeing everybody, because I didn't get that notification. I didn't have the freak out, but I saw other people dealing with their freak out, and the little snippet that someone posted was of that alert, and just below it was Justin's face mid-rant of the last episode. It was great. So we're trying to have this episode tied into the last episode. It's just continuous headaches, like cosmology and the apparent multiverse that we're all in, and how free will affects it, and mantles.
But there's good news, because I think part of it is going to be that we might have actually gotten some questions answered since last time. At least I feel like I've got some questions answered. It's not the full answer, but there are some, you know, potentially answers this time. So instead of just being like, what the hell is free will and who gets it and why and whatever, do we want to kick off with that, or did you want to kick off with something else?
I guess let's start with the free will and I guess this capital free will versus supposed free will, that we kind of have this distinction now.
Well, and I'm trying to bob it, right? Like, I'm trying to dumb it down to my level so that I can use the crayons to explain it to me, you know, type of situation. So the thing that's been troubling for me while we've done this research, and I bring it up a lot last episode, is like, clearly creatures in the Dresden verse, whether they're angels or fairies or fallen angels or whatever, make choices. That kind of belies free will to me. And the simplified explanation that I got is that I'm terming it as like uppercase free will, you know, to kind of differentiate it, because we got, it's the English language. We got the same word means 11 different things. So uppercase free will is, you know, you have the ability to make choices that affect the multiverse that are not constrained by anything for the most part. Like, we're not talking like obligations, whatever. We're talking about like metaphysical power for, you know, like the fairies and angels and whatnot. So like Harry, for example, he makes choices and causes splits in the multiverse. Spoiler alert, mirror, mirror. We're going to get a whole lot more information about this, which is part of why we're interested in talking about it in the first place. The other thing is that, you know, where you start to get like smaller and smaller fonts, maybe it's not capital, but it's like, you know, we start out with 20-point font, and then it becomes 18-point font, and then 16-point, and then down at like 4-point font would be like the angels, right? Because the more power you have to physically affect the multiverse or the universe, which hopefully we're going to talk about that a little bit, that's the less free will you have. You know, things like Faravax, if he showed up physically, bodily on the planet, it's not just bad for the ground around him, it's bad for reality. Same thing with Uriel. If he showed up fully, you know, as an archangel, it would be really bad. But specifically, they have a whole lot more constraints on it. Now, to take it one step further, because it still doesn't necessarily jive with how the angels can choose to fall and whatever. And I don't know that we have a good answer for that, but we do have a good example. And it kind of all goes back to the Negloshi. You know, the Negloshi are another example from another, you know, mythos, or however you want to phrase it, where basically the Negloshi were angels, you know, at least as far, you know, as a comparison goes. And then they chose to thwart their higher power, their gods, and fell as a result of it. So if you, you know, thwart free will, then you fall, is apparently, you know, one of those things. So now that I'm saying it out loud, I'm wondering how much Nemesis might have a play in that, or if any, or if that's just a mechanism there, because, you know, we kind of see that with the fairies a little bit. And that's one of the things eventually I want to try and answer as well. But anyway, long story short, you know, typically you just have less free will. And so I guess the rest of the conversation there is that, you know, things like Mab, for example, and of course there's a whole bunch of things below her and above her in power level, but things like Mab are like difference engines, right? Like she's N plus two. You put in six, you're always going to get out eight. So, you know, she can't choose to be anything different than she is because that's what she is. Right. And I mean, Harry could probably choose not to be an asshole, but, you know, it's Harry. So, but it's things like that, like that when they're making changes and whatever, they're not actually making a choice. They're enacting their role in the universe, tying back to she's a force of nature, which we've brought up in previous episodes before, that she's not, you know, good or evil or anything like that. She is just, she's just Mab. She couldn't choose to be nice one day because she's just Mab, and that's all that she is, at least while she's being Mab, right? Because then we get complicated in, like, how much can she do outside of her mantle, because mm-hmm. she can apparently go watch Frozen with her daughter at the movie theater, and I'm pretty sure the universe didn't hard code her for that one. But
right. Yeah. She's not just a blizzard in high heels. She's also half mortal, at least. There's some amount of mortal.
Is there mental big decisions that are almost programmed, and maybe the human side of her has more free will? Is there a distinction?
How she decides to parent her children is an easy example. That seems to be not mantle related, but how the fact that she has to be the reason that to protect the outer gates, that probably is hard-coded,
right?
Until Nemesis interrupts it.
So to differentiate, the key constraint there is power. So, you know, if she decides to be like, well, I'm the queen of air and darkness, so I can make everybody ice cream, isn't going to happen because that's not why she has power. Mm. Right. But, you know, Mab as a mom, which is the, you know, nightmare fuel everybody needed out of cold days, you know, she can choose to take you for, you know, ice cream when she's full, well, able to make it, at least power wise, but she's constrained from abusing the power or using it in certain ways and things like that. Yeah. And
when she's on these field trips with Sarissa, she's probably just trying to act like a mortal as well. She can't, I don't think she would be able to, at least, go to a baseball game and then call down a blizzard on them just because. She seems like she'd have to be acting as a mortal in that sense.
Or if she did, Titania would get something to balance that scale.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't, right? You know, because that's mm-hmm. the other part of it too, is that right now, like so far as the definition extended, we have focused on what you can and can't do. But the very, very important counter to that is also who your foil is. Mab is literally directly foiled by Titania, to the point where when, you know, Butcher talks about who could kick whose ass, he says between the two of them, it's literally a coin toss, because they're that evenly matched. And so, you know, there you have the fallen and the angels and so forth, where like their decisions counter each other. That's why Uriel is able to intervene on Dresden's behalf in Ghost Story / you know, Cold Days Again, you know, because what we assume anyway, I think it's still not out, but what we assume was Lashiel breaking the rules, you know, because she basically...
I think that's confirmed in Skin Games that she's like.
She said it was
like spitefully something like something like you should have died some when I did.
Or, yeah, like something okay. like a whisper in your ear that should have killed you and it didn't.
Gotcha. Okay. But
I don't know if that's her taking responsibility for having said it or she sent someone to do it. She knew of it.
Right. Either way, she was the person working the strings on that one, you know, it seems like. So, yeah. So you've got stuff like that, right? So, you know, if Mab abused her power and it wasn't like, you know, complete dereliction of duty, then Titania would presumably be able to balance the scales, you know, and maybe not even necessarily like a local balancing, but, you know, she's able to pocket that one for later. Who knows? Like there's not a ton of great things that immediately come to mind other than the way that favors work. Apparently favors can be, you know, cashed in and other slights can be balanced, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 years later. AKA skin game again was, you know, Mab kind of getting even with Nicodemus for, you know, at least something that happened like 1,000 years ago, right? So when she was coming to power. So
I mean, Mab having the check of Titania and just kind of again of like summer night and Aurora, as crazy as she had become, she was trying to break that cycle because she was frustrated with how, like, the fact that they're wounding and healing each other's objects every single time, nothing is changing. But that seems to be, like, the scaffolding, I guess, of the multiverse. Like, that seems to be so important to hold in place that all of those mantles are stuck there. Does that make any sense?
At least this reality. So you said multiverse, and that's one of the things I kind of want to explore as well, right? Because we can say some things pretty certainly about how it works in our reality, as in like our Dresden Files, our Dresden verse that we're reading about and whatnot, right? But where it gets a little bit more interesting is like how much of that bleeds over into the multiverse. You know, so at least in our reality, I agree with you. And what you were saying to kind of bring up something pre-show was that, you know, with the idea that Mab is a difference engine, right? Mab would be mostly the same in all realities, at least presumably. She'd have to make slightly different decisions, but are there realities where she's the summer queen instead of the winter queen? Because in a universe with infinite combinations, is that something that could happen? Or is her mantle so set that that would never happen because of the way that it works?
If you take it so that Mab and Titania are just the names of the women who got those mantles and their personality is entirely tied up in the mantle, then at some point when they came to power, it could have just been a coin toss as to who got which one.
Right. Well, and that's a fun thought too. Like I want to focus more on the mantles because that's the more immutable part, but it's a good idea that like maybe there's a universe where it's not. Mab is the summer queen in the sense that like the physical person Mab is the summer queen, not as in like, you know, the mantle. Like there's not an evil summer queen. It's just like they switched places because they were twin sisters and you know. Yeah, and whatever made one mantle go to the other went the other way. And I could see that for sure. So.
Yeah, and the fact that they're twins, identical twins, and they have like this habit apparently of identical twins, that could be an effect of a mantle making it happen so that they are the closest thing to be each other's equal opposite as possible. Or the mantles are like molding them into that form anyway. Like what if they weren't identical and it was just a happenstance of pregnancy?
Right.
There's also that whole, even though she's supposed to be like basically the anti-Mab, like the, you know, the foil for Mab and their sisters, and there are these big immutable unchanging powers, she's still a mother whose daughter was killed and who like hasn't let that grudge go.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, however big these mantles are, and from however many hundreds of years they've been these forces of nature. And even though Bob says that, you know, in 20 years, 50 years or something, you wouldn't be able to tell that the old summer lady and Lily, what's her name? Lily and
Aurora,
yeah. Be able to tell them apart. There's still there must be something of the personality of the human, of the person they were, other than these big, huge powers.
Right. Yeah, and that's interesting too, because it also kind of brings up people like Odin, Vaterung, Kringle. Like, he's clearly at least somewhat different between his mantles, you know. And again, it may just come down to his domain and his power primarily, but you've got three mantles that, you know, have some similarities, but they're not, you know, like Odin's not exactly the fairy godmother of giving everybody presents, you know. He, you know, Norse mythology is just a little harsher than Santa Claus, so.
No.
Right. So.
With Odin, it's really hard to separate what could be the mantle versus his personality, because it's his mantle is tied up into his personality and his history, his family and everything.
Right.
We're able to separate that more with fairies.
And for him, it, I think it becomes more clear, though, in a way, like what the mantles kind of are doing, right? Because he is able to kind of like change them up, whether, you know, he takes one off and puts the other one on, does constrain his actions. But like you said, his personality seems largely unchanged between the, them, you know, at least, you know, it's like the, you know, multifacets of your personality, right? There's the face you see, there's the face you present to your friends, there's the face you present to whatever. So you can tell that he is slightly different, you know, again, like even Kringle on the Wild Hunt, I have to imagine is a little bit different than Kringle at Mab's birthday party for Dresden, you know? And so there are slight variances, but it's not like night and day. It's not
there's
like
definitely a difference, because Kringle at Harry's birthday party is there to party.
Right. Yeah. Like it was definitely like, you know, he was clearly friends with Eldest Gruff and whatever. So it was kind of like, at the very least, there was some respect, if not like, you know, old battle buddies in a way, you know, whether it's, you know, yeah, we fought before, but there's no hard feelings, or we fought on the same side before. Let's share some old war stories. But there's kind of that air that I picked up anyway, just kind of in how they interacted with each other. So I don't know. I don't know how much this is getting off into the weeds a little bit, but maybe we should talk about how it relates out to kind of the multiverse. And I mean, yeah, we could bring up the grand unifying theory.
So I don't know. I'm just going to pick this thing. In previous episode discussion, Josh was asserting that Mab, for example, is going to do the same choice every time in every multiverse universe, different thing.
Right.
But that can't possibly be entirely true, just because everyone else is going to be doing different situations. So all of the mortals running around with their free will is they're going to change the situation. That's going to change the at least the details of what a mantle person will choose, even if they have the same force that's acting on them.
Right.
So they've got like slightly different shades of the same color, all the way to the point that eventually they're no longer going to be the same color.
Well, they'd have to choose different things. I mean, it kind of goes, so to me, there's two different points that we're moving, right, in the multiverse, and they're not always fixed, but, you know, when you're doing the permutations, it's easier for me to fix one point and see how one side changes and then fix the other, and then you can kind of see how they both change. So if we assume Mab is the same in all universes, right, one of the ideas we were talking about before the show was like, okay, so there's a universe where Dresden is got his ass kicked half the time. There's a universe where he didn't make it and Thomas is the Winter Knight. There's a universe where Elaine is the Winter Knight, and so forth and so on. And you cycle through these other possibilities of people that have similar power sets to Dresden or have literally been mentioned, like, yeah, well, if you fuck up and fail me, then I'm just going to come for your brother, right? So there's multiverses where that has happened, and it, for all we know, it could still happen. Then on the other side, you've got the Mab changes with their changes, but like, is she always the guardian of the gates? Is she always the Queen of Air and Darkness, or is sometimes she's the Summer Lady, like we talked about, because there was a slight difference in their power levels and preparations, and she became what Titania is in our universe and whatnot. You know, so they're almost, it seems like there almost would have to be, unless there's something from the next layer up, you know, cosmologically speaking, that affects each individual reality. And so, yes, all of the mortals can change, but basically the chessboard is the same, right?
Which would be interesting to find out in the fact that, well, at least Bob said that somewhere there is a version of the universe where Spider-Man is real. So something like, it's kind of like trying to show an exaggerated example of everything is possible through whatever multiverse that we're in.
Right.
And if there is something constraining, forcing the chess pieces to be the same, that is a restriction we've never heard of before.
Well, right. I don't think necessarily that there's a, well, I don't know if that's true or not, with the whole, there's a multiverse where the Spider-Man is real in the dress and verse. Are we going by the, you know, every choice makes a new reality?
Or usually that's the theory of multiverses.
Yeah. Well, there would be two. Right. So the two things are, you know, from like a fully, truly multiversal perspective, you've got like the Rick and Morty multiverse, where literally everything in every universe has ever happened. Right. There's a universe where I'm a chick, you're a dude, he's Batman, you know, so forth and so on. Right. There is somewhere out in the multiverse, I am Batman. OK, it's not this one. You've never seen me and Batman in the same place at the same time, though, right? And even Jim talks, like, somebody asks him, like, is there somewhere in the Dresdenverse, in the multiverse, where, like, Star Wars happens? And he's like, probably, and you don't want that. Trust me, it's worse than they make it look in the movies, you know, paraphrasing, of course. So there's that. And then...
Yeah, that's like the Rick and Morty, like you said. And then there's the... All right, maybe that's my... What I think is the one, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. It's like the kind of one that I got from Stargate, which is my first real introduction to multiverse theory. Mm-hmm. Was when I watched that, it was basically like, it's like every decision we can make will make a new reality, but they're all still based in kind of who we all are. So, for example, in the Rick and Morty, anything can happen. Uh-huh. Whereas here, it's like the closer we are, it's also there, like where it's like the closer the realities are to each other, the similar they are, and the further away we get, as different they are.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to get into, is like, in my theory, Rick and Morty is the most correct in the sense that, just because it's a common genre everybody can latch onto, right? Everything in every universe ever can always happen. However, there's local multiverse as well, and so if we really want to get a headache, but the local stuff is where the decisions are what make the difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so in our local multiverse, what Harry had for breakfast that one time, whether he said, I love you to Susan at that critical moment, or decided to go left or right, that is what changes it in a local level. And so as far as like what I think is going to be important to the Dresden Files, we're talking local level, multiversal, like who made what choice, right? Whereas like, yes, there is probably somewhere out in the vast infinite multiverse where Harry is a Jedi instead of a wizard, but it's not any place we're ever going to run into, like, you know, and part of the whole, like, you know, he's a girl, she's a whatever, you know, comes down to like the one, if you've ever watched that, it's a Jet Li movie. It's mostly an excuse to have him kick his own ass. But, you know, like that's something that happens. One of his multiversal personalities is a serial killer. And, you know, they talk about how he's gay in one universe and he's a chick in one universe. And like literally every decision.
I love that little moment.
For an early 2000s action movie, I actually really liked it. I thought it was like, it had potential for a sequel.
Yeah, it was weirdly fun. You can't really like describe it in ways that make it sound good, but it's like, yeah, it was fun.
Right. Yeah, well, and I mean, that's where it becomes limiting, right? Like how many of the infinite multiverse, you know, how many of the different realities are they already dead? You know, how many of them did the Outsiders win? Or is it an all or nothing, you know?
Okay, that's something that is questionable. It's like, what happens with the local or non-local universes in which, what if the Outsiders won? If there's this one, with give it some sort of tag denominator that has like, okay, the Outsiders won in this one, the one right next to it, do they have access into that one?
Right.
Is it, if they win in one, do they win in all of them?
And I'm gonna go out on a limb and say no, because there are some words of Jim and whatever. So again, you know, wordof.jim-butcher.com if you're listening and not familiar with it and whatnot. But he does talk about it a little bit. And it seems like the Dresden Files is mostly going to focus on our universe, but we are going to see it through the lens of another one. And that's where we get Mirror Mirror. And so it seems like it's a per universe kind of deal. And so, you know, to me, though, it's like the Outsiders could potentially be outside the multiverse. And it's like, think of a chessboard again, right? Like each universe is an individual square in this one. And so like sometimes they win that square, whereas in our universe, they're probably going to lose because otherwise it's going to be a very dark 20 book run. You know, I tend to think the good guy's going to win. Even if he dies, at least he's going to win. So, you know, our universe, outsiders are attacking, right? But like it's all the same outsiders, potentially. Or are there four walkers for every universe, right? Like, that's where it starts to break down and you start to think, you know, like, the one that I really want to bake your noodle with is the white god the same for every universe? Or, because to me, he's multiversal, like, he's in the cosmology. So I think outsiders are up there in the cosmology as well.
If the white god is not the same in every single universe, then we have the possibility of basically all of the angels, archangels, fallen, and demons being different. I mean, as in, right, they might be making different decisions. They might be like a different cast of the 30 Denarians, mm-hmm, but they all originated from the same point. And if that point is different, then there's like no connection between so many branches of the multiverse.
Well, the connection would just happen, you know, the next
further,
layer up.
Further back. So, like, yeah, they're significantly less local. It gets a hard conversation.
Right. And that's where the headaches come from. And that's why I'm like, let's get away from the like, Rick and Morty level, because that down that way lies madness, right? Think of Harry Dresden is really the man of a million ants instead of, like, a human being, right? Like, so the local stuff where, like, let's focus on, you know, the slight differences on the day-to-day decisions.
On, the most close realities, the most too close or something, you know, right, small things.
So we get things like The Warrior, where this idea gets broached in Side Jobs. We get things like Mirror Mirror, where it's going to relate back to a decision made in Grave Peril. You know, so that's why I was like, I think the best hope we have is to keep it local, because I think that's all he's going to really focus on. Like, you know, the Q&As are great. We can get that flavor and, you know, because Butcher ties all mythos and all theories together, then sure, you know, he'll figure out a way to work that in there. Right. But as far as what impacts our decisions, you know, we are going to see a little bit about how that free will plays out in the multiverse, you know, at least locally. And, you know, kind of have in a way. And that's where the angels and the fallen play. Ultimately, you know, the fallen, we see them, they've got their battle shapes and they can cast spells and do cool things. But really, ultimately, at that level, you're fighting for individual choices. You're fighting over free will. That's what Uriel cares about. He's not going to show up and unmake your planet. That was easy. He wants to fight for, you know, did you make the right choice? Did you, you know, save that girl from running out into the street? Did you talk Michael down from murdering somebody who had kidnapped his daughters? You know, which are, of course, big personal decisions. But, you know, in the scope of the world, it's not like, you know, it's going to change who's in power next year. You know, so it's just kind of interesting to think about it in all the layers of complexity that brings.
I mean, it's also a big question. It's like the Uriel that we see and know, is he the same as the multiverse next over?
Right.
How similar is he in all of the various things that he does? Because if they are relatively immutable, how similar are they?
Right. And that's the thing, because so Uriel's a great example, right? Because we know that the Dresden next door is an evil son of a bitch. You know, he has, you know, again, spoilers, but the little bit of information we've gotten is that he has gone and kidnapped Harrys from other universes to murder them to fake his own death at least once, but multiple times. And so clearly that Uriel is going to be forced to have made different decisions than our Uriel made if they are in fact different beings.
And that's another thing I'm thinking is, our Uriel, these big all-encompassing power things, are they separate for each reality, or do they see all realities?
Right,
exactly. Because, oh boy, then Uriel's busy.
And it's like, how far down does that go, right? Yeah. Like, is there any place where it overlaps? And, you know, I tend to think yes, but I could buy no, right? But then if there is no place where they overlap, that's where you really get nuts, where it's like, okay, so, like, Alanis Morissette is the white god in one universe, and then, you know, Morgan Freeman is the white god in another universe, and so forth and so on, you know, like, that's where I think...
I got both of those references.
Me too. I feel good about myself.
Good job.
The Alanis Morissette one would be the more obscure one, but that's a good movie.
It's an older movie anyway, compared to the two, but yeah. So we got Dogma and...
Bruce Almighty?
Yes, thank you. I was like, I don't get that other reference apparently, but yeah, so in case you didn't catch them, but
all right, so let's try to rein it in. So let's keep it to a little bit more local thing because it's also
even more local.
Local. Ivy.
Okay. Yes.
Archive.
Super local. Least.
Yeah. Well, the idea of the Oblivion War, apparently, yes, through a word of Jim, you said, because you're my only source on this, is the archive will be the last thing that can remember something if the Oblivion War is successful, and then she will delete it from her own memory, therefore banishing that entity from that universe.
Correct. Like, basically, that's the basic gist of it that I got. And so in the multiverse, right, it becomes a little bit interesting. One of the things that I had is a problem with the Oblivion War, right? So Oblivion War, if you haven't read Side Jobs and you're not familiar with the story backup, that's like all of it that we get other than Word of Jim. And he, even still, it's fairly sparse compared to everything else. Like, I think he's got like one main Q&A where you get like, you know, the topic, and then it's all like shades of that same kind of conversation. But what's happening is, like, you know, the Venatori, like the big, you know, the capital V Venatori, not the little guys that have been helping the White Council, for example, they're running around destroying books and fucking up cultists and a bunch of other stuff to get rid of knowledge, to get rid of the memory of these creatures. And
basically, Lovecraftian horrors, right? That's the main,
like, those kinds
that are not of our reality.
Right, in theory, but theoretically it could happen to anybody, because I think there's a Word of Jim that talks about like the Brothers Grimm and that they did it with the fairies.
Yeah, and that that's not even Word of Jim. That's from Cold Days.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. So I really need to go reread the books, and that's coming soon. Yes. But you know, some of my anchor points are relative instead of definite. But okay, so anyway, so basically they get reduced to the point where, you know, theoretically only Ivy contains that knowledge because she is the archive. And then, like any good database, she can delete that information, therefore consigning them to oblivion. That's what a win for the Venatori looks like, okay? What are you laughing about now? What did I say?
That moment in the prequels of Star Wars, it's like, what happens if someone deleted it from the library? It's like, that doesn't happen. It's like, yes, it does.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, surely the archives must be incomplete. So, yeah. So that does happen in the Dresdenverse, right? And I don't know how many times that's happened or anything like that. I guess nobody would know, right, how many times the Venatori have won, because that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. So they're basically, quote unquote, consigned to oblivion. Where this relates back to the whole cosmology and whatnot is, at least in our universe, like, the working theory that I have is that she's local, or her function is local. And when you're consigning them to oblivion, you're banishing them from this universe, from like Dresden's, you know, our Dresden's universe. And the way that kind of makes more sense is because one of my problems that I had with the Oblivion War is like, okay, well, these guys didn't just like spontaneously show up out of nowhere, right? Like, they're supposedly thousands and thousands of years old. They're before human civilization. So where did they come from? Apparently they came from outside, one way or another, whatever the mechanism. I don't know if that makes them, you know, capital O outsiders like we've been fighting in, say, Cold Days, or if that just makes them something else from the outside. But it seems like the way to lock them away is to delete all knowledge from them, and that locks them outside of our universe. That's kind of my theory.
Does it also lock them outside of our multiverse?
I don't think so. And that's why I think the quote-unquote outside might be multiversal. It might be, you know, even Stephen King, he has an idea presented for this, you know, the creatures from the mist and it, you know, theoretically come from this area. And there are other entities that live out there in the space between universes. You know, so if you want to latch on to something like that, if you're a Stephen King fan, But to me, that's kind of what it is that there is something actually outside. There's outside of our universe, and then there's like, you know, between multiverses or outside of the multiverse. And I think that's truly where the outsiders come from. And part of why I think that the White God is multiversal as well is because he locked the outsiders outside of all realities, not just our reality.
Right.
Whew, take a breath. Let that sink in. Get that headache going right there. That's
now,
a good one.
Connect this to your wonderful epiphany you had before starting recording.
Okay. So Josh presented us with a question that he wanted to figure out, which was, what is the role of belief in the Dresden Files? Why is belief kind of the magical power source as far as it comes to deities, similar to like the Oblivion Wars, similar to, you know, like the White God, but even more specifically, we see it in an act with the fake Shroud of Turin in Death Masks, right? It had power because people believed in it, even if it was a fake, right? So where that all kind of came in is that belief doesn't necessarily give you power. Like in because I believe in you, you get a shiny nickel, and then if you get enough nickels, you can do something with it. Belief anchors you to our universe, tying in the cosmology, free will, the Oblivion Wars, etc. All of those topics basically link together with that belief and why mortals are important. Mortals can bring you into the universe, which is a theory that I've had on the outsiders for a very long time anyway, because only mortals can summon outsiders. So it's got to be something else that's unique to mortals, right? And this is going to start getting crazy if I think about it too much, but basically, because then I would got to think about the Red Court summoning them. And so that apparently if you get turned, that's still good enough. But anyway, before we get into the Battle of Sicily and all of those shenanigans, so belief is what anchors you to our universe. And the more believers you have, the more power you're able to use in that kind of sense. And that's where belief kind of becomes important there. So, you know, that's what the whole Oblivion War is about. Ultimately, you can't believe in something that you don't have knowledge of. So they fight it on the knowledge side. They banish all knowledge. Therefore, you can't believe in it. Therefore, it has no power in our universe. That to me is where that all kind of, where that conjunction is, where it all meets up. And I was so excited to have that little epiphany, as you called it. So,
well, all right. I will quibble with you about one thing, is that you say that like, it's not the belief that actually gives you power, like you're the nickels and a pile of nickels eventually get to buy something. Is that I think that having belief, having faith is a choice. So it is an action of free will. If a mortal acts with their free will in a way of giving someone their faith, then that someone could get a little bit more powerful that way.
It could be, you know, like, I mean, hell, we're all but developing right here on the spot, right? So like the act of free will and the act of belief is kind of like, you know, don't spend time thinking about your enemies because you're basically letting them exist on your time and they're taking away from your life just by doing that. So that could be an aspect of the free will where it's like your belief in them, even so much as knowing their name, gives them just a little bit of power. And when you start looking at millions and millions of people, you can do some real stuff with that power. So and
I feel like some amount of evidence, even though it seems a bit further away, is the idea of the way true love can protect you against White Court. It's like love is immutable, or it's intangible. That's the word. And yet it had that really strong effect. And it goes both ways. So if like believers have that type of relationship with an entity, that is tangible in the same way.
Saying they're in love with the dark god.
Yeah, I was like, this is getting hentai. I need you to help me out with this. Like, because we're talking old ones in love, which is not a conversation I want to be having here.
Does that happen in some Lovecraftian stuff?
You're telling me that the Stygian sisterhood didn't have some, you know, extra reality relations with some of their old ones? Like, first of all, they were supposed to be hot, but this is Dresden. Every woman's hot, right? And then there was definitely some like grafting of body parts involved from what I remember. So, like,
and they were like enhanced.
You don't got to whisper it. That just makes it worse. Like, So yes. But I mean, you know, it almost certainly ties back to like how much belief and whatnot. And it pulls in from other ideas as well. Like, you know, there are some mythos and some beliefs where, you know, saying the name of a demon gives them power. Bob was concerned that Dresden so much as wrote down Lashiel's symbol the first time that he did it, because that was going to either give her insight into where they were or give her some kind of power, or just otherwise was bad, you know? And so, you know, that kind of ties into, it's like the more belief, the more faith, the more it's in your mind, you know, the more power they're getting from you.
That was never explained. Why do they always destroy the sigils if they write it down? Like Harry puts it on a donut and then promptly eats it. Things like that. Why do they have to destroy it so fast? They never explained the threat of that.
And that's a fair point. So, I mean, going back to in the simplest form, I think it's a form of giving them power, like saying their name and, you know, like creatures that feed on fear. Obviously, the more you're afraid of it, you are, the more, you know, the more power they get.
They might have some sort of almost awareness around their specific symbol, and you don't want a fallen listening in.
Right. And there are some creatures that do that. As well. You know, what's funny about that too, though, is right, like Bob freaks out about that, and then Harry, you know, gets it on his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, to be fair, Harry knows that if the evil gets in your hand, you're supposed to cut it off, and yet he kept it. So, you know, like he could have had a chainsaw. Well, maybe not a chainsaw, but you get the idea, you know. So yes, there is something there, and we don't have, you know, like an explicit answer that I'm aware of. So we'd have to reach for the similarities. And, you know, I don't spend a lot of time researching the Fallen outside of the Dresden Files. So I don't know if there's literature that would explain that, you know, because that seems like it would probably cross that taboo a little bit there. It's like, oh yeah, let's go look at their website, you know? Yeah.
And then it's interesting to remember that Bob couldn't look for the shroud because it was on a different wavelength. Mm-hmm. Okay. But he freaks out about the sigil.
Well, because he knows.
It
he knows about it. It doesn't mean like,
you why know, it's is on the shroud on a different wavelength, but a fallen isn't?
Well, but we're talking about knowledge, right? Like he knew about the shroud and he knew it was on a different wavelength. He just wasn't going to be able to manipulate anything about it. So he knows about sigils and he knows that they have power. But he's not able to, you know, because otherwise maybe say if he was, say, let's take Bonnie, right? And some of the theories around her that she grows up and because she is a divine being instead of just a being of intellect, maybe she plays by slightly different rules. And so maybe she would be able to teach Harry how to block that out, whatever it is.
Well,
instead of just destroy it.
Basically confirmed that in some question, I don't remember where, but I remember him saying it's like, yeah, because of her parenthood, she can basically affect that. She's just not going to be able to do that in such a short amount of time because she's a baby.
Right. Because she's got to figure it out. And
And understand that pancakes are inanimate.
Right. Which is like the most horrifyingly adorable thing in recent memory. So, yeah.
The talking skulls like, pancakes are inanimate.
Right. Yeah. It was like, the fact that we had to teach you that is a little concerning. Like, I mean, I guess it comes back to, like, you have to teach all babies that the difference is, like, they can't, you know, eat you, they can't wield an immense amount of power or talk by the time you're doing that. You just kind of do it through action and osmosis and whatnot, you know? Whereas, like, yeah, you know, you can't eat mouse, he's living, but you can't eat pancakes because they're inanimate. So,
and then steak. Yeah.
Right, which used to be alive but now is inanimate and now you can eat it. No, don't kill mouse so you can eat him. You know, like,
oh, that would have been my conclusion.
Right. Yeah, I was like, just to make sure we cover all the bases, you can't kill him.
Before we move too far away, I just saw in chat that Wonko really hoped for an Oblivion War spinoff starring Thomas. I just think the essence of what the Oblivion War is, that sometimes it's like almost 50 years between they do something, it wouldn't make for much of a spinoff.
Right.
I just wanted to like comment on that for him.
I think people have wanted that since Backup, and unfortunately I'm not sure it's going to happen unless it's that mysterious other spinoff, because we know pretty much like he's been moving ahead with the young adult series where Maggie and Mouse are the Scooby gang
at Hogwarts,
you know? Yes. But he had also teased pretty much in the same Q&A initially that he was going to do a spinoff with another character. And I think he said something like, I don't know, but it basically everybody like kind of was like, oh my God, we're going to get a story about Goodman Gray. And there's nothing to say that he couldn't be part of the Oblivion Wars or whatnot. But I mean, like, that's our best hope. But I mean, it would be neat to get, yeah, a story from Thomas's perspective, especially if it's, you know, all those times Harry couldn't find him, it wasn't him just being lazy. He just looks like he's lazy because he always sees him at when he's resting. And then at night, he's like running around fighting the Oblivion Wars, you know?
Really? So. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't want a Thomas spinoff, but I would be so much more interested in a Goodman Gray spinoff, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just a fascinating character. We don't know enough about him, so he's a mystery. I want to know more.
Right.
Or I would really like the French-Indian War thing with whatever it was with the British and...
Japanese.
I mean, I really want that book a lot. Like,
yeah.
I'm sad. I'm glad there's going to be a spinoff with Maggie. I think it's going to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have much preferred the whole French-Indian spinoff.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of the problem, right? He stepped in it as far as setting expectations and giving us hooks for all of these other stories. And then he goes off and fucking writes one little short story on an Oblivion War that our main character's never really going to find out about by nature of how it's fought. And it's like, damn it, are you kidding me? You know, like, I mean, at the end of the day, I think every good author kind of does this, right? Like, as soon as J.K. Rowling finished up, they were like, but what about all the other stuff? So now she's writing an entirely new set of books based on all the other stuff. And, you know,
just gives an expanse to the world, if nothing else. Even if you never hear about it again, the world feels more deep because you know it's there. Even if it was just at one time.
Right. Well, and because there's a huge amount of characters that we want to know more about. Like, I would be happy to have a Kincaid story that, like, we find out what happened in Budapest and, you know, whatever.
I have a question, and I'm using that as a segue.
Do it.
Segue. You talked about Kincaid, and I have a question about Ivy and her function with the Oblivion War.
Okay.
The fact that, like, as Kincaid said, I think in Changes, she is not able to give any information that might affect something.
Okay.
So, what is she able to affect? And the fact that she's able to defend herself against the Fallen, she's able to like decide who gets to die if she's arbitrating something, or can delete something in the Oblivion War. It's just like, what is the realm of her ability?
I would say she has next to no power, right? Like more in the ability to affect stuff. I would say that she's, you know, it's hard to relate her to, like, she'd be like the high end immortal, right? The comparisons we have is that she was probably able to kick, you know, at least two or three senior council member asses at the same time. Considering,
yeah, I mean, she is the most powerful wizard, probably, basically.
Right. Like, she can cast two spells at one time. Type of thing. Like, she was ambidextrously a badass, which Dresden had never seen before. But as far as, like, you know, fucking shit up, she's probably up there with the gatekeeper of, like, man, if you wish you had power like mine, but I can't use it to affect anything. You know,
well, I mean, the nature of the archive, it gets very strange in the fact that it is definitely some mantle like thing that gets carried down mother to daughter in mortals. It doesn't even affect their longevity.
Right.
Yeah. I think we're going to learn about it also, that there is a very good reason why it's mortal to mortal, no longevity. Since she has access to magic, she might live a wizard's lifetime. I don't know.
Yeah, and
I don't know if that's been specified.
Question. Does she have ability because she's the archive? Does she have ability because her family line is so powerful? And maybe that's why they are the archive.
Well, so there's a couple of little bites that I want to take out of it just to get some things that come to mind. So first of all, it's probably past mortal to mortal because it has to be, because the whole forgetting, like, it's a willful act, and the forgetting part, like, if you're an immortal being, you probably don't forget a lot of things.
Yeah, it is a choice to forget something. that many immortals may not have.
Right. As far as the longevity, like I would say maybe on average she lives longer, because the other part of her ability is the fact that she knows everything from every medical journal forever. So, I mean, she kind of lectures Dresden and Kincaid about that a little bit, right? Because the whole like, well, I have to leave because it's my bedtime. And, you know, they say that I should get X number of hours per sleep. Like, she has that kind of conversation. So, you know, damn well she's not eating, like, you know, Cocoa Puffs, because she's probably eating, like, you know, a balanced breakfast. She's taking care of her body. And
her favorite snack is celery. She's that kind of girl.
Right. But because she knows that is, like, the perfect food for, you know, maintaining longevity and taking care of her body.
I think they were mentioning, she has the compulsion to protect herself. Uh-huh. And it was a freak accident that her grandmother was killed, because it was just a car crash.
How did her mom not have this compulsion? She committed suicide, right?
I guess maybe. What if the compulsion made her stay alive until she had a viable daughter to give it to?
Maybe. And this is getting dark. I don't like. Yeah, it's hard to say. So
yeah, and the compulsion to protect yourself, it might certainly affect longevity. Maybe the magic ability gives her a longer time to live, but it doesn't seem to be confirmed as long as a wizard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and mostly by, you know, it seems like the risks of business, right? If it didn't drive the host nuts and people weren't out to kill her all the time, then she'd probably live for a long time.
But what is the point of killing the archive? At best, all you can do is make it so that it's being wielded by a baby who can't communicate. That is it.
But if you killed Ivy, especially when she was younger, there was no heir, right? There was no line to pass it on.
I mean,
right.
There's no daughter of hers, but who's to say it can't go to a cousin?
We don't.
Or it can't follow like the way that the fairies are doing.
The Stygian sisterhood wouldn't try and take a whack at her. Even if it set them back 20 years, don't you think that would be enough?
Yeah, doing a 20 years thing. Like, yeah, like Mab needed a Maeve that's acting less like a Maeve. Okay. Insert Molly for the 20 years that you've got.
You're being a Maeve. Go to your room. Sorry. Just.
Yeah. That might be worth it. Mm-hmm. But the power that the archive seems to have seems like it's going to be forever for as long as that mantle is there. And I have a feeling it's going to travel either from other daughter or from cousins or any other family relation or a friend in the way that, like, the mantle of Maeve went to Molly because she had a relationship with Leah.
But for the information we've got so far, it's no, right? Because so far as we know, for three generations, it's gone mother to daughter. So, and you know, it's come from, like, we know a little bit of history, like the Oracle of Delphi was the archive, right? So she was able to disseminate some information, but had to do it in, you know, kind of a prophetic and vague kind of sense, right? But, you know, yeah, like there's no indication that the archive operates with the same rules as the Fey mantles. And it may be the difference in their utility. It may be in the difference in how they were created, or just the fact that this one doesn't work that way, right? Like it has to be a descendant line instead of a prepared vessel, like the Fae, you know, because there's also, we don't know. So another difference, for example, is that the Fae mantles, specifically the ladies, they would go back to the queen to disseminate it, right? Or they would go to the nearest.
The nearest aspect of itself.
Right. So there is no other archive-based thing that we're aware of. It's one of a kind.
Yeah. And we don't even know who made it, essentially, right?
Right. So one of my wild ass guesses for that is that because of the role that it serves and kind of how it works is that it was made by mankind. It was made by mortals at some point. Like, you know, you can say it would have had to have been the White Council or at least members of the White Council to help create it, because we don't know any other mortals that can wield that kind of power, right? So maybe the OG Merlin was involved with it somehow.
Except the archive outdates him.
Yeah, because I don't know. It's not. I didn't say it was perfect.
Have you seen OG Merlin do some time travel shit? I mean,
that's fair too.
Okay.
You know. Yeah. So
let's open up some time travel thing in our multiverse talk, because, you know.
Whew. I think it's different because I feel like it was manufactured. And that's my wild ass guess, is that it was manufactured by mortals to do a specific thing.
Okay.
Whereas, like, uncomfortable the fairies. Thought? Yeah, go for it.
When do you think Ivy's going to get pregnant? Because when she shows up in Peace Talk, she's going to be about 18.
Right.
And there's Kate, the father.
You know, it's going to be that uncomfortable. It's like, who did that to her?
I swear I didn't touch her until she was 18. You know, and that's the thing. I'm like, that's the thing too. Like, you know, she's going to be totally fucking nerdy and pragmatic about it. Right. Like,
and how she's telling me that desperately needs one.
Wield spells in either hand got, you know, jumped unwillingly or something, like that. She wasn't 100% in control of that situation one way or the other. Like, yeah. Like, so you tried to make a move on the archive and she wasn't into it. You were the first person to have his nards in space. Like, you know, that's how that's going to go. Yeah. But
this compulsion
she probably made the move on Kincaid and be like, why do you think I kept you around so long? You know, like,
that's, and I think he basically kind of sees, he's kind of like a big brother stepdad kind of thing. Right. So I think you'll just be like,
yeah. No. I was thinking uncle and like not the creepy uncle, you know, so like, but.
I mean, he's the only parent figure she has.
Right.
So that would be the weirdest, most uncomfortable option. But the compulsion that she assumedly has in order to make sure she has a viable daughter to pass it on to, so something bad happened to her, that's got to be getting stronger and stronger, especially as she's reaching physical maturity.
Well, and presumably, especially after Small Favor, right?
Yeah.
Like, talk about a close call, you know?
I mean, at best, in that situation, if that ever happens again and she has a viable heir to give it to, she can kill herself and get it out of that person's grasp.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, that was a really big fucking powerful circle, remember? So it might have been enough to stop it. So
maybe.
Yeah.
But
like, at least until they got her to that point, you know, so.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that circle didn't just happen either. Like, there would have certainly been some time to set that up. Yeah. So those are a lot of uncomfortable conversations, and maybe we'll see, you know, like if the lid that blows off in Peace Talks is literally, you know, the magical version of a thermonuclear bomb.
I mean, we already know one pregnancy is happening in Peace Talks. Why not?
Right. Everybody's pregnant. You know, that's the new Peace Talks theory. So everything's happening in Peace Talks and everybody's pregnant.
Yeah.
Harry already had his kids. So Bonnie's going to be older. Everybody else, it's time to catch up, you know. So Marcone's pregnant. Murphy's pregnant. The Archive's pregnant. Justine's pregnant.
Lara.
Molly can't be pregnant. So she's off the hook. Lara's pregnant, you know, so.
Molly could be pregnant if Mab dies. Or maybe Mab gets pregnant again. Maybe Leah gets pregnant.
Oh, man.
Titania.
Chills, and not in a good way.
Lady Mantle become the Queen Mantle, even if the Queen dies? Or does the Queen just jump to a new host?
No.
They moved up, right?
Yeah. If like, Mab dies, Molly becomes Queen, and then she needs to give the Lady Mantle to someone else.
Right.
So the Queen Mantle will go in her, and then she would have two mantles, and we need to pass the
Lady
Mantle. And because there are two mantles in her, she has a baby. I know. So, like I said, this is getting weird. So, anyway, I'm going to segue this time.
Yay!
Because this also kind of deals with the mantles thing. So, one of the things that I definitely wanted to get out there to kind of tie things back around as well and give Sarek the name drop again was that a lot of the genesis for the last two episodes was from his post that we mentioned last time. And ultimately, it was the grand unifying cosmological and mantle theory. And that his one-liner of the theory is that lesser mantles are aspects of the greater mantles, you know? And I mean, I guess we could say it's like the Russian dolls, right? You know, like, I don't know, however you want to kind of visualize that. But like, you know, theoretically, the archangels would be aspects of the white god, and the angels would be aspects of, and, you know, specifically getting down to our level so we don't have to go through 8,000 different metaphysical creatures. You know, with the fairies, like the mothers, you know, are kind of or the queens are aspects of the mothers, the lady is aspect of the queen, and so forth. So I don't know that it's a perfect theory. I think it probably plays out in some cases, but that is one thing worth talking about as well, and how that affects the cosmology, and why we partially tabled that last time, because we wanted to lay some foundation before we jumped all the way in the deep end of, let's talk about the multiverse, you know, and how everybody's decision and who has free will and, you know, all that jazz.
Yeah, and we still don't have a very good explanation as to why Molly's face was on a statue in Hades' vault.
Right.
Beat Hecate.
Right. And I mean, I've got personal theories for that that are, you know, way older than the Dresden Files, but the Dresden Files seems to follow a semi-cyclical nature as well. You know, like big events, big milestones or mileposts reoccur. The details are different. Who was in charge of who and whatever, that's different. Who's named is whatever. But there are these confluences. And clearly, you know, it's like the Matrix thing, right? He's not the first Neo. Dresden is not the first Dresden. He's just this generation's, you know, he's this millennia's Dresden, right? And so the real question you've got to ask in that sense is, who was in the last cycle? Who was in power in the last cycle, or even around in the last cycle? And what did their Dresden look like? Because if we go by a millennia, for example, then 1,000 years ago, roughly, was the Battle of Hastings, which is the last time we know that the guard changed. 1,000 years before that, roughly, was there was this Jesus guy running around. So was he their big, you know, thing? And that's why it's like, I kind of hope not, in a sense. Like, I don't...
Are we saying there's like a mortal champion per millennia, kind of?
Well, maybe that's what the Starborn term means. We don't know.
Well, and right, because it all comes down to, like, for whatever reason, Dresden gets a little bit more free will, or it's a little bit more impactful than other mortals, including
gets
like
more
the
free will due to contrary stubbornness.
Right. Yeah. Every 1,000 years, there's somebody who's so
really
fucking
stubborn.
Yeah.
And he had the power to change the world.
Right.
It's Burger King that's best, damn it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that part seems like it lines up, but, you know, there are some interesting other things to consider there because, for example, the Red King, Lord Wraith, Mab, and Duriel, you know, so like, and Duriel and Nicodemus specifically have been around for two cycles if it is roughly 1,000 years. So there are some interesting confluences that, you know, line up with those kinds of, you know, 1,000 year cycles.
Was the champion 2,000 years ago.
Right. And then he fell. And now look at him.
And then he fell. Then he went to the dark side.
Right.
He's like, I got to go to the dark side to get enough power to protect us in the future.
Right. We've got to go back to the future. You know, the long way, apparently. So, yeah. So, I mean, those are all kind of the open questions. And, you know, semi-infuriatingly, I think a lot of them are going to wait till the BAT before we get to know them, because if we knew them beforehand, we'd know too much, you know, because there are definitely things where he's like, oh yeah, that should happen about book two in the BAT. And it's like, for the love of no, I've got to wait so long. I got
to. Well, wouldn't have to wait. Like, we should be a couple of books further in than we actually are.
Theoretically. So, yes, from what was planned and the way things shaked out, yes, we're not exactly following the perfect, you know, outline that he set out. But I think it's possible that he's going to condense some things and, you know, move some stuff around and maybe drop things altogether.
I mean, I know a lot of stuff happened in real life. And in the end, of where I'm at and that whole thing is
trying to make peace with it. Yes, we see that.
You're
trying to make some peace talks?
I'm at the point where it's like, when he's like done with the moving and the house is done, and if he can just get back to the old cycle with like once a year, like, please, Jim,
right?
Please. Well, I've learned how evil you can treat us now. Like, I mean, right. It doesn't even have to be once a year, once every 16 months. I mean, I'm not.
once every year in a week, you know, whatever. We're lenient.
I mean, it's all off for your books.
This is just the latest cycle of real life, right? Because the other one that gets cited by him a lot was the whole deadbeat versus proven guilty, right? Like the fact that he went hardcover changed the entire face of what he had envisioned for the Dresden Files, at least concerning those two books. So we don't know. With we got 5 more books to go. So who knows what
probably other things. Probably a bit more than 20, actually, is what he said.
And I'm just talking the case files for sure.
But he said like there were some stories that ended up being written that he hadn't planned on. Uh-huh. Then he might be 22, 23. He said that at some point. But now that he's been delayed a couple of years, he's going to be like, okay, maybe I can cut something or put something together.
Especially if it's like side stuff that he can bring into these other projects that he wants to do. You know, I think it's still likely we're going to wind up with about 20 books and then he'll figure other ways to get this material out there. So
if he has the idea that it has to be book 20, that's right before the BAT, because 20 is a Denarian book. Right. And then if he has to go further than 20, he has to wait until 25.
Right. And that's why I'm like, let's just keep it to 20 for now. And we'll talk about this in 4 more years and find out where we're at. So,
maybe halfway, 22 and 3 BATs, 25 total.
There you go. Yeah.
One per year ish.
Okay. I think we have headaches large enough that we should probably end this episode and we'll probably just bring the headaches back next time.
My favorite part is how we kind of like mostly actually covered our notes. That's my favorite part. Cause the last couple episodes we're like, oh my God, we got so much left over.
We still have left over, but we just are getting better at figuring, nope, this is an hour.
Right.
Plug stuff.
Plug our shit. We've got Dangerous to Go Alone is another podcast in the Broken Jars XYZ network. They talk about nerd and geek culture, just in case you needed a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. We've got the Great Scott podcast, which is still going on about The Office.
Do we know what they're doing after yet?
They're still thinking Parks and Rec, I think.
Still think they should do the UK version of The Office.
They might do that at the end. It's like
it's the better version of The Office, by the way.
When you go from the American version to like the British version, though, it's like playing New Game Plus. It's like the same game, but a little better. So, they'll probably wait. So we've got High Fantasy as well.
Yeah, we're doing a delayed Valentine's Day episode because it's like, that was a thing. We could just make the idea about romance and stuff because we never know what we're talking about.
And you guys are the experts on that. So. And then there's us. So thank you guys for listening. And I guess we'll catch you in episode 61, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.